Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network.
And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
The Rose Bowl. The game that inspired the college football bowl season has a long and storied history. The stadium itself is 100 years old, and in celebration of it, Pigskin Dispatch is assembling some of the top historians and authors to share the memories, people, and events that make the granddaddy of them all the special game that it is. Enjoy this Rose Bowl memory from PigskinDispatch.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we are celebrating the Rose Bowl and its centennial anniversary of the stadium. And the game's gone on quite a bit longer than that. And we have a historian that's going to talk to us about that. His name is Timothy P. Brown. You've heard him before here every Tuesday. And Tim Brown, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren. Thank you. Looking forward to chatting. Love the Rose Bowl. I grew up a northern Midwesterner, Great Lakes sort of person. And so the Rose Bowl was near and dear to my heart as a young man.
Well, I can say the same thing, being from the Great Lakes. It's always been an interesting game in our household as well growing up. And, some great things have happened. And, thanking you for coming on and celebrating this Rose Bowl 100 coming up, this anniversary, and get to talk a lot about the history of the game in the stadium this month. And we're glad that you could be a part of that.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I actually, the Ohio State-Utah game was played there this year. I think it was on the first, right? Played on the first?
I think
whichever,
it was
played on the first or second, whichever day it was. I was there the next day.
So ah, okay.
I didn't get to see the game itself, but did the stadium tour the next day with my family, and so had a blast. It was a great environment.
Popcorn was a little bit cheaper that day, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, and there was all the glitter and whatever, stuff that you could find, but it was actually pretty well cleaned up by the time we got there. I was impressed.
Wow, very interesting. So the cleanup crew gets their props at the Rose Bowl. Great job, yeah. Guys. But this is our kickoff into this Rose Bowl month, and you've volunteered to come on and give us some great history of the Rose Bowl, even before it was called the Rose Bowl, and some of the early roots and beginnings, and we're interested to hear that.
Yeah, I said that I've always loved the Rose Bowl, and actually the first book I wrote was, and a lot of my collecting early on was Rose Bowl, related. And so, it's the history of its evolution is always, kind of fascinating to me. But, it's really a story of, Los Angeles, the LA area, back in the day was just, it was a dinky little town. There weren't many people there, but obviously, had some, it was a nice setting. And so, Pasadena, which was north of town and connected by the railroad, they started, they wanted to promote their place, there were a lot of orange groves and everything out there. And so by way of promoting and getting people to move there, tourists to visit, they started this thing called the Tournament of Roses in like 1890. And so, that went on and on and, kind of, again, promoting life and real estate. And they eventually decided to schedule a football game associated with their annual tournament, which was always, January 1st, unless it was a Sunday. So they ended up fairly early in the season, they invited Michigan to come out and play. And ultimately they hooked them up with Stanford, and that was for the 1902 game. So at that point, you know, Michigan was a powerful point a minute team under Yost and Stanford. Yost had actually coached them the previous year, 2 years before. So there was a connection there, but they just weren't as strong. And, you know, so, you know, the two teams agreed to play, but they didn't have a stadium. So they had to, you know, had to go through the process. They bought land in town and, you know, slapped up a stadium with box seats and everything. And I think it held, you know, something, 15,000 or something like that the first year. They called it Tournament Park, you know, because it was Tournament of the Roses. So Tournament Park. And so, you know, they ended up, they spent a bunch of money to build the stadium. And while they made money, you know, they sold all their tickets and everything. That was great. They ran into two problems. One was that Michigan blew the doors off of Stanford. So it was 49-0, but they stopped the game early, and it just was not a competitive game. So, and then the second thing was they spent a bunch of money on building the stadium. And so the ticket revenues and the subscriptions that they had sold left them with, I think it was like $4,500 in debt, which is, you know, big money in those days. So they ended up in a situation where it's like, okay, do we, you know, how do we make sure we don't have another blowout? Because then nobody's going to want to come, or if we don't have a good matchup. And yet they had to service this debt. So they were in a bit of a quandary. So they, for 1903, they tried to schedule a game. I'm not going to get into that because we're going to do a separate segment on that. But, you know, just to say that they tried to schedule a game. They tried to do it in, you know, a couple of additional years, but, you know, things didn't work out. And then you had a situation where Cal and Stanford dropped football in 1906. And so, you know, there just weren't many good, at least California-based teams playing. So they didn't really get to play another game until 1916. And by then, you know, some of the teams, Washington State, Washington had a run of great teams in that era. But in 1916, Washington had a really good team under Lone Star Dietz. And they ended up playing Brown in the 16 game. 17 was Penn and Oregon. So you're getting this kind of Northwest versus Northeast, you know, Ivy sort of thing, which is really, you know, it was a neat thing. And, you know, at that time, most people still saw the Ivy as the top teams out there. So to get them to come out and play was a big deal. And it, you know, it was, got a lot of national attention because, you know, hardly anybody else was playing at that time, you know, maybe some all-star teams or something here and there, but basically it was the only show, not just in town, but in the country, you know, for the most part. Then we get into the war years. And so military teams played in the 1918 and 1919 Rose Bowls. Again, won't get into that too much because we'll do a separate segment on that. But suffice it to say that, you know, they almost didn't play them, but basically, you know, Woodrow Wilson gave the nod and said, you know, go ahead. And so, you know, for different reasons, they ended up with some military matchups. I know 1920, we go back to the Ivy League. Harvard, is playing, and they played Oregon. So, you know, Oregon was, you know, really pretty top-notch team back then. And so after that, then we get into this, you know, what I'd call kind of from 1921 to 1945. That's really when it became truly, truly like a big-time national event. You know, I mean, it had gotten lots of attention before, but you know, you started seeing more teams being willing to go out to California to play. You know, one of their early challenges was that teams just, either the faculties wouldn't let, you know, the teams go out to California. You know, they thought it was commercializing football, you know, that kind of thing. Or in a lot of cases, that especially, you know, Cal and Stanford, they didn't want to play. You know, they had their seasons, they were done. And like going to Pasadena was no, you know, great strokes for them. Yeah, they were already out in California. So But so, you know, in the 20s is when it really started, you know, booming. They had some great games. Cal had Andy Smith as a coach. So, they were really top notch. USC was starting to, which had been playing small college football before that. They start becoming relevant nationally. And then, the big thing, too, was in 22, they started building this new stadium, which was originally called the Tournament of Roses Stadium. But, in the run-up to the game, a columnist kind of copied the nomenclature from the Yale Bowl and called it the Rose Bowl. And the name stuck. And so, both the event and the stadium have been called the Rose Bowl, really ever since.
Very interesting. Yeah, you can see I'm camped out in the parking lot of the Rose Bowl. I got it behind me.
That's right. and well, I should say that the official name still remained like the East West. I forget what it was called, East West Classic or something. It's some really bizarre name. And so even like all the tickets at the time, had that printed on it. I don't think the Rose Bowl popped up on there for maybe a couple decades. I was saying how it became more like nationally relevant. One of the neat things in the 20s was in 1926, that was the first year Alabama plays in the Rose Bowl. So they were the first Southern team. Georgia Tech plays in 1929, and that's when we've got they played Cal, and that was the Wrong Way Roy Regals, game. Mm-hmm. So just a real memorable game. Navy played during the 20s. Columbia, an Ivy League team, shows up again in 34. But just generally, like the Big Ten didn't play, Notre Dame played once. In like mid 20s, 24, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And the Ivies pretty much stopped coming, for the most part, with a couple of exceptions. But, what's now the SEC and ACC, those teams were open and willing. Nebraska, plays in the 41 Rose Bowl. So again, it was just it was a great event, and it was also, you'd started seeing intersectional games being played during the regular season. So the Notre Dame USC thing got going, cooking in the 20s. And, so just that, those kinds of matchups, the Rose Bowl kind of reflected that. And then, kind of mid 30s, you also then see the Sugar Bowl, the Orange Bowl and the Cotton Bowl get started, as well as the Sun Bowl. So that whole bowl season, that comes from the name of the Rose Bowl, right? And, so that, bowl games, bowl season, all that really is a result of the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, I think last year, it was 42 bowl games for college bowl games last year. So that shows how much has grown since then.
Yeah, well, and I think ESPN, NFL teams, and, a couple of other networks own like 65% of those games. So they're pretty much made for TV. I mean, they're fun. If your team goes, hey, great, good for you. Have fun, whatever the destination is. But, it's most of them, it's not about the tourism thing anymore. It's all about television content. So, I guess just one other thing, a minor little thing, but during World War II, that was the only time that two teams from the same conference played in the Rose Bowl, because USC and Washington, due to travel restrictions, for the colleges, USC and Washington played in 44. So then the big news really, so the reason I love the Rose Bowl is because in 46, the Big Ten and the Pacific Coast Conference, which became Pac-8, Pac-10, Pac-12, they agreed to play one another every year. They were the two conferences that were kind of most you know, kind of, other than the Ivies that hadn't been formed yet, they were the two conferences that were, you know, kind of very more academically oriented, less commercialized. And so both of them played, they sent one rep, and that was the only team that played in bowl games, you know, from like 46 until, I want to say into the 70s, that was pretty much maybe as early 70s that switched. You know, so it was, yeah, I think for most of us alive today, it was the Big Ten and the Pac 10 or 8 that played. And so, you know, that's still my vision of it. And, you know, post 2000, we start getting in the national championship tournaments and that kind of stuff. So like Miami, Nebraska in 2002, Oklahoma, Washington State in 2003. And then, you know, there's been several others. So I think there's now been like five or six, maybe there's no seven. Yeah. Seven.
Yeah. You had USC, Texas, probably about a decade ago.
Yeah. That was 2006. And like 18 was Georgia, Oklahoma. So, you know, there's been a number of them where, you know, it's kind of, for me personally, it's kind of lost the luster. I mean, I just love the conference affiliation. But for the general fan, you know, the general football fan, it's, you know, obviously the national championship is a big deal to most people. And so it is what it is, you know, and we'll see how it all shakes out, you know, moving ahead.
Now I got a couple of questions. Maybe, you know, I don't mean to spring these on you, but maybe you don't know the answer. Maybe you do. Now, I take it with this starting out being the Tournament of Roses, it still is the Tournament of Roses is sort of the organizer of it. Now, I take it that part of California, Pasadena has has a large growing cultivation of roses. Is that?
You know, I think it was kind of a like a civic pride thing early on that they were that they kind of decorated the streets or whatever, planted roses in the boulevards and that kind of thing. But other than that, I don't think there was really any, you know, a lot of the floats and everything were, you know, weren't necessarily roses, you know, back then and certainly now. It's a much better name than Tournament of Carnations, right?
Right, yeah. Tournament of Daffodils or something.
Yeah.
So watch it. They might have ESPN might have on ESPN4 a bowl game that the Daffodil Bowl or something. So we got to watch it. So, okay. I guess my other question is now, you know, Keith Jackson, and maybe he's the one that coined it, but called it the granddaddy of them all, you know, famously. And it's got such a great association with the Rose Bowl. Where did that term come from? Was it Mr. Jackson that started, or did it come up?
Yeah.
That?
I mean, as far as I know, he's the one that, that coined the term, like, you know, like you said, and, I'm going to write something down about that, but, you know, he was a Washington State grad. And so, you know, he was kind of part of that, you know, that culture. I mean, he just had a way of saying certain things and Whoa Nelly and Hold On and, you know, some of his little slogans, but, you know, the granddaddy of them all, a number of times after he, you know, came up with that phrase, it shows up on, you know, Rose Bowl tickets and, you know, so they definitely, they bought into it. There's no doubt about it.
Listeners, let's take a pause for a second here with what we were just talking about with the granddaddy of them all, because with the magic of editing and pre-recording these podcasts, we can stop and take a look to make sure we have accurate information. And Tim has gone out and done some research on this granddaddy of them all thing. And Tim, why don't you share with us what you found on this, the history of that?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I don't have access to the recording, so I'm not sure exactly what I said, but I think I said something like, well, yeah, sure. I think so. I assume so. Of course, Keith Jackson is the one who came up with this whole granddaddy of them all thing. And so one of the beauties of you know, and one of the things I really enjoy doing is looking into where did this term and where did this phrase expression originate? And it turns out it wasn't Keith Jackson at all. And so, you know, the story is now, and believe me, I love Keith Jackson. And when I was, you know, say 25, almost 30 years ago now, I used to go out on, I had traveled with a bunch of buddies and some of my sibs, and we would go to a college rivalry football game every year. And, you know, I mean, we saw all, kind of all the great games. We did it for 20 years. And so, but one of the things we did all the time, we kind of catchphrase was a Keith Jackson imitation. It was hit and dropped and fumble. Oh boy. Right. And you would hear that all weekend from one or the other of us. And I wasn't the best one at that particular imitation, but anyways. So the point is, I love Keith Jackson, but, you know, you asked me that question, then I had to go back and dig into it and see, you know, what the real story was. And it turns out that the expression, the granddaddy of them all, you know, at least shows up in print for the first time in like 1897. And it was kind of an expression used to describe the first, the biggest, the best of something. And it could have been anything. The biggest cart, the biggest bale of hay, the biggest whatever. And so it first showed up in football in like 1932 when a USC quarterback happened to be older than the norm. And so they called him the granddaddy of them all because he was older than his, you know, teammates. And then it was applied to the USC at Notre Dame game and Harvard Yale because these were supposed to be great rivalries. And then it finally gets applied to the Rose Bowl in 1934 when Columbia upset Cal, and it was considered the top sports story of the year. And so they called it the granddaddy of them all. Now, the key point there in saying that is that was 1934, and Keith Jackson was 5 years old at the time. Right. So I'm not sure he's the one who originated that phrase, or at least applied it to the Rose Bowl. And then there's an article in 49 that, you know, the headline says the Rose Bowl is the granddaddy of them all, blah, blah, blah. So it starts becoming a phrase that's used in the press fairly often. And then here's really the killer to kind of prove Keith Jackson had nothing to do with this. And it's from 1977 to 1987. So an 11-year stretch, the Rose Bowl tickets themselves had the expression granddaddy of them all printed on them. Right?
Okay.
So 11 years in a row, granddaddy of them all on the Rose Bowl tickets. And so what year was the first year Keith Jackson broadcast a Rose Bowl game? It was 1989, 2 years after that 11-year stretch. So Keith had nothing to do with it. I mean, for sure, he popularized it. And like in my mind, I don't care what these facts say. In my mind, it's still Keith Jackson, right?
Right.
But the facts are that, you know, he did not coin the phrase. He did not align the phrase, associate the phrase with the Rose Bowl. That was done before he ever showed up.
I think, you know, a lot of it's just the way he would say things and his cadence and pronunciation of things. It's memorable. I mean, so many things, like you said, you know, and that's one of them that resonates with me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I adore the guy, you know, and he had this humble, folksy, you know, kind of way of speaking, which is very attractive and perfect for football.
Yeah. Right? Whoa, Nelly.
Yeah. I mean, but nevertheless, I mean, and so the only thing about it is that, like, there are some Rose Bowl associated sites that still push this narrative that he coined the phrase, right? Well, he didn't. And sorry, those are the facts. And that's it.
Well,
much to my chagrin, he was not the one who came up with that phrase.
Well, that's what, I mean, this is a great little exercise. I'm glad we could put this spot in the middle of our original interview, because this is really seeing, football archaeology at work. And what Tim does is great research. So great stuff, Tim. And thanks for clearing that up with us. And
Well, had you not asked me that question, I would not have looked into that phrase, because I already knew the answer. Right. But then you asked me and I was like, oh, I don't really know the answer, do I? So now I do.
Absolutely. So, okay. We'll take you back to our original interview on the Rose Bowl. Thanks, Tim.
If you go back to the 20s, especially, and 30s, there were a lot of places trying to start something along the lines of a bowl game. A lot of times they were all-star games between two different conferences, or people from, college players from this state versus that state. San Diego had a Christmas tournament in like the 20s and 25, 24, that kind of time frame. But there were a number of them that tried and failed. And the only other one really besides the Rose Bowl that lasted, from the 20s was the East-West Shrine Game, up in San Francisco. Once kind of the economy started turning around a little bit during the Depression, that's when, the orange came in, and then the sugar, and then the cotton. So there were attempts, but, the Rose Bowl is the granddaddy, as far as just, time and place.
Right. It's the initial recognized college bowl game, I guess, of the holiday season.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Interesting.
Yeah, and okay. It's actually, Pasadena is a really nice town. Lots of beautiful old architecture, and so I didn't get to see the parade last year, but definitely want to see it sometime in the future. Just and the game itself, but that'll have to come.
Yeah,
not this year, but that's soon.
Got to be one of those bucket list things, right? Very interesting indeed. Tim, you have a great website that you bring out some great football information each and every day. Maybe you could share the name of the website and how people can get some of your stuff.
Sure. So the website is footballarchaeology.com. You can just go to the site, and the vast majority of the content on there is available to anyone. Just use the little magnifying glass button to search, by search for content, or just scroll through. There is some premium content. But if you want to make sure that you get access to the articles, just subscribe for free, and you'll get an email every night at 7 o'clock Eastern, with what I call today's tidbit, 30-second sort of, piece of content. And then, a couple times a month, I also put out longer form articles, and there's a couple of other things that I do on the site, including posting these podcasts whenever I appear.
All right, well, we definitely appreciate that, and we appreciate you coming and sharing not only football history, but this Rose Bowl history in honor of the big game coming up here in a real short time on its 100th anniversary of the stadium. So Tim Brown, Football Archaeology, thank you once again for joining us.
Hey, thank you, Darren.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross. the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that, Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcast. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.